In a world where misinformation is on the rise and the need for a more scientifically informed public becomes more and more important, science communication becomes a skill of priority for scientists and science organizations alike.
The field of science communication is expanding its box of tools as technology and trends change. It has grown beyond writing articles for journals or interviewing for newspapers and giving public talks to now include the world of social media and whatever is currently trending.
Or what's on fleek? Are the kids still saying on fleek?
I don't think so.
Oh well. Join us now as we get to know a PhD candidate who has made a big splash with her unique approach to science communication and learn about how she researches the mating habits of a cool species of sex-changing mangrove fish on this episode of
Ocean Science Radio. Welcome to Ocean Science Radio, the podcast that brings you the latest, greatest, and sometimes deepest stories in the ocean. I'm aquanaut, shark ecologist, and aspiring badass, Frances Farabaugh.
Can we say Dr. Frances Farabaugh now?
Indeed you can! Newly minted Dr. Farabaugh.
You heard it here, folks. Join me in congratulating Dr. Frances Farabaugh, dissertation defender extraordinaire. As listeners are probably aware, I'm ocean and climate communication specialist, Andrew Kornblatt. Today we get the chance to chat with Brooke Fitzwater, a PhD student in the early lab of the University of Alabama in Tuscaloosa, who studies sex and fish and slays on social media.
Brooke has made all sorts of informational videos about species ranging from sea spiders to blanket octopus and the sand striker. The videos range from irreverent to straight up Star Wars. She has over 230,000 followers and 10 million likes on TikTok alone.
I will tell you, I'm on TikTok and my most viewed videos are of my dogs or the one cool hagfish behavior I caught at the Monterey Bay Aquarium. They get like some views. Brooke is in another quantum far, far away from that.
Everyone, meet Brooke.
Hi, I'm Brooke Fitzwater. You might know me as Ocean Philly on TikTok and Twitter and Instagram. I'm currently a PhD candidate at the University of Alabama, and I study sexual selection, reproductive behavior, and the interaction between parasites and the host sex.
Brooke studies the mangrove rubus fish.
The species name is Cryptolabius marmoratus. They are like the weirdest fish ever. You think of weird fish, and then this one just takes it three steps or five steps further than that, because they're all born as self-fertilizing hermaphrodites, which means that they can fertilize their own egg with their own sperm, which is extremely rare in vertebrates, period.
The mangrove rubus is one of two species that can do it, the other species also being a fish, but that's beside the point. Back to the mangrove rubus. Tell us more, Brooke.
They can also tolerate ridiculous ranges of salinity. They can live out of water for 66 days. There's another paper that I think is going to be published soon that they found it was like 90 or something. They're crazy in a cool way, obviously. But they can also transition from hermaphrodites to males. So they just keep getting weirder. And so I'm really interested in figuring out why on earth would you transition to become a male when you have this reproductive assurance because you could do it by yourself. Why bother with males, right? And then I'm also really interested in what's going to convince the self-fertilizing hermaphrodite to outcross, to mate with the male.
Like the name suggests, these fish are found in mangroves, but they're not the pretty mangroves on the edge of crystal clear blue water that you might be thinking of. Brooke tells us more.
Just to give you all a perspective, 35 ppt is typical for the ocean. So it's a little bit less than the ocean, but you can find pockets of it where it's 12, where it's 10, 5, and then you'll have others that are 45, 50, 60. So they have to range, or they go over a span of different salinities that they have to deal with. But in general, they're brackish.
And what Brooke is focusing on with these fish is rather specific.
So I'm really interested in the visual and the chemical cues, and these can give different pieces of information to the fish. So for example, a visual cue might help the fish determine the sex of the other individual, or it may provide information about how healthy that individual is. But you can also have chemical cues, which can give similar information, but it also can give you information such as how related am I to that other fish? Or are they super dissimilar from me genetically, which might be better for my offspring? Because you don't want to mate with someone that is very similar to you, which is why we don't date our cousins. Obviously, morality issues, but there's other things involved. And so I'm trying to tease these apart by using models that I've painted to look very similar to the fish themselves. And I tease apart each of these different types of cues by presenting them separately.
To observe these fish doing, well, private things, Brooke creates the illusion of privacy for her research subjects.
The way that we do it is I have compartments, is what I call them. And so I have a little sealed off section so they cannot see me. And then because I'm that person, I have another section to make sure that they cannot see me. So it's like completely boxed off. They don't know I'm there, unless they like hear me because I like accidentally drop something, which I try never to do. But they have their own little space, and there's a tank that I put them in. I give them a little acclimation period, and then we just allow them to interact with these models and with these different cues. And so we have video cameras that record it, and we watch it later. Because it's better for you to not like actively be watching them as you yourself and they can see you, because that might bias their behavior. They might be spooked because there's someone there. They might assume that you're a predator. In our fish's case, they know that we feed them. And so if they see you, the only thing that they want to pay attention to is you because they're expecting to get fed. And so I don't want them to see me. So that's why we do everything semi-remotely in terms of I record it on the camera. That way I have it for later anyway. And then I'm in the room reading Dune currently. Not, I've read the first Dune, but I'm on the Dune series. I'm on Children of Dune, and it's a long book, so it'll keep me occupied for a hot minute. And then I just record these, and then we can watch them later.
Personally, I would stop before God Emperor of Dune. That is where things get weird. Anyway, Brooke's research is still not finalized, but they are learning a lot.
We're still trying to figure out what's going on. And it can be really hard because with fish, it depends on the species. So some species, they pay more attention to visual cues. Some fish pay more attention to chemical cues, and it's highly dependent upon their environment. And then some of them, they need both of those cues simultaneously. So we call that multimodal signaling because you have different modalities, signaling modalities such as auditory, which I'm not looking at in this fish, but it could be auditory and it could be visual, for example. So those are two different types of signals. And then those together might actually give them even more information than if they were apart. And so we can never tell which one they're going to pay attention to.
Brooke is also interested in parasites and their relationship to reproduction.
So I haven't been able to start this research yet, but I have been funded, which is exciting. And then we're going to do some preliminary work this summer. So I'm really excited to see what the results of that are. But a lot of people do not realize how much parasites differentially affect the sexes, which I'm fascinated by. There's so many different factors that might drive a sex bias, is what we call it. So a higher number of parasites, for example, in the males versus females, or vice versa. And so things like testosterone, for example, in males can actually make them more susceptible to parasites because the testosterone has what we call a double-edged sword effect, where, yeah, it might make you pretty and make you have like big antlers or something that the females are attracted to during courtship, but it also might have some not so great effects on the immune system. And so you might look pretty, but you might be infested with parasites. That's something that I'm really interested in, is figuring out, okay, how do these parasites differentially affect the sexes? And what is it specifically about these differences between the sexes that is driving this? Why are we seeing this in the first place?
Brooke's research alone is super interesting and highlight worthy, but we would be remiss if we didn't talk about how Brooke broke into social media stardom. Back to her.
This has been kind of a long time coming, And I try to also keep it more broad. So I do freshwater species sometimes, but I have a stronger background in marine, so it's easier for me to talk about those. But I had started off doing marine BioBits on Instagram back in 2019, I think it was. But I have always been interested in outreach. And so it just kind of started small. And so with the marine BioBits, each Saturday, I would just do a similar format to what I'm doing now, except it would just be Instagram stories. I wouldn't be talking, it would just be photos and facts. And then I did that for quite some time. And then TikTok came on the scene. And so for a long time, I didn't do it because I was nervous. I was like, well, what if I say something wrong? Or what if I'm not presenting it in the best way? Or if I put all this energy into it and then it doesn't go anywhere? And eventually, I was just like, you know what? I'm just going to do it. Just going to see what happens. And it blew up pretty quickly. I mean, I think the fourth video that I posted in the style that I currently do blew up, and then it just went from there. And so it was just kind of something that just naturally happened in terms of like I went from starting it on a small scale and then growing it. And then I started branching out a little bit on TikTok from just doing the fact videos to doing the like skits, quote unquote, with different audios because I kept seeing everybody do these and I was like, oh, they're funny. But I can't do that because I'm like boxed into this specific fact structure video that I normally do. And then I was like, no, you're not. Just try it. And then they've also done well as well. I just think it's easier for people to engage with science if it's something that they can access. So if it's funny, for example, it might click with them longer rather than if I'm just throwing facts at them and it's just dry. Or it's just like, here's this bare bones thing. I want it to be something that's going to click in a way that people understand what that humor is, although they tell me they don't always understand. But that really resonates with people or doesn't feel like everything else.
Brooke has covered a number of species, but if you asked her if she had to pick some that were her favorite, she would say.
Yes, I love giant isopods. There are a couple animals that I will do repeats of. I usually try not to repeat too often, but there are certain ones that every time I do it, people go nuts. So those are like the giant isopods, sunfish, the mola mola. Blanket octopus is another one that people constantly request, and every time I do it, I get a kick out of that one. Sea cucumbers and pearlfish is always fun. So those are kind of my favorites to talk about. Lamprey are fun too, and hagfish.
Science communication includes informing the public about specific research, but when it comes to inspiring through her work, Brooke is making a lot of impact.
I've had a lot of people say that because of my videos, they're going to school for science or for STEM. Several people have said that they're going for marine biology. And I was just so blown away because I was like, these are these 1 minute videos where I talk in, I guess you could say, a menacing slash threatening tone about different aquatic organisms. And that inspired someone so much that they want to go to school for it. It's so exciting to me. And then I've had a lot of people too that they're not necessarily going to school for it, but they're saying that their interest in science has increased substantially since watching my videos, and they feel like they've learned more than they ever did in high school or in college. And that's really exciting to me too. Because teaching is very important to me for my career, my academic career, because I think a lot of the times people forget that there's people that they're teaching. Like for me, I have a people first approach, student second teaching philosophy. You need to be able to connect with people and you need to make it something that's memorable so they can remember it. It's not just about testing, it's about how can we instill this love of learning in people at a stage where often people lose it.
When it comes to science communication, Brooke is an advocate of trying many different avenues, especially what platforms are growing in popularity.
Sometimes Twitter tends to be an echo chamber where you're in the scientific circles, and then people in the scientific circles are retweeting each other and liking each other's stuff, but it's not going outside of that. And it can be hard to get out of that because of the way that the Twitter algorithm works. Same thing for Instagram. But on TikTok, you have the opportunity to reach the actual general public. And to me, that's why it's such an unprecedented way to do scientific outreach and why I was so drawn to it and why I'm so excited about doing my video content there, because there are so many people that I'm in front of that are not scientists, which is exactly who I want to reach. Because my goal is never like make more scientists. If that happens, that's awesome. But what I want to do is show people that science can be really fun and exciting. Learning can be really fun and exciting. And also to help potentially with conservation efforts, in that if people are aware of these organisms existing, they're going to be more likely to want to protect them or do things that are more sustainable, or be aware that this organism lives in this place. So if I go visit here, I can be aware that it's there and I can take pictures of it and get more people interested in it. And it's just kind of like a little ripple effect to get more and more people access to education and access to knowing what's there and what needs to be protected.
Brooke, who else out there is doing science communication well that you want to give props to? Or who should listeners check out?
I love Marine Bioho. That is, in fact, her name, Lucy. She does similar-ish content to me, but like we do differ in the ways that we do it. But I love watching her videos. They're always so funny. And so she does a similar strategy to me. And I think she was doing videos quite a bit before I was, where she's using audios that are trending on TikTok, but she's giving it a marine biology spin. And they're always hilarious. They always have me laughing out loud. And I think that's another great way to just get people to at least be aware that these things exist, or that science can be funny and that it's not just all like worksheets. Lindsay Nicole is another great person to follow. So she does more just general zoology, but she has a very unique way in which she presents videos. They're really funny as well, and I enjoy watching her fact videos. Sophistication is another person. So Jada Elcock, she's also on Twitter. She does great shark outreach content, information about sharks. She does other animal facts videos as well, but her content is also very funny and really engaging. InvertiBabe on both Twitter and TikTok is a great follow.
Got it. Next question. What would you say to somebody who is trying to, say, venture into science communications? Whether it's with an established organization trying to bring in new people to their content, or trying to reach new audiences, or somebody who just is really passionate about a particular nerdy subject and wants to talk about it to a larger group.
The thing that I tell people is to first just make your content. A lot of people, they stop doing it or they don't ever start because they're so worried that my content's not going to take off, nobody's going to like what I'm putting out, or I'm like kind of nervous about how it's going to be, or I'm nervous about being on camera. I was also very nervous about being on camera because previously every piece of content that I had ever made was almost never me in front of the camera. It was always me behind it. And so now I had to be in front of it, and that was a little bit scary. And then you get used to it. The other thing is to find your specific voice, which is hilarious considering that I have very specific voice that I do these in. But what I mean by that is find your way of talking about science, find your specific way of presenting content. For me, somehow it just clicked doing what people call otherworldly and vaguely threatening. That's the style that worked for me. I enjoy doing it, honestly. It seems to have really clicked with people because they remember it because it's so odd. And that works really well for me. But if somebody was to come and copy that, for example, which a couple of people, like, they'll do it as an homage to me. So I don't think they're copying. So not them. But if you try to like copy somebody exactly, that's not the best way because it doesn't feel genuine. So be genuine to yourself. Like, even though what I'm doing is technically an act, it's genuine to like something that I think is funny.
Got it. So being genuine, or at least being true to what you think is funny, and just make content. Any other tips and tricks or things that come to mind? What is the secret sauce?
One of the things, at least with TikTok, is that you should try to post semi-frequently. I try to post at least one video every day because otherwise people are not going to remember you and they're not going to keep coming back. And the other thing too is that if you keep trying and posting videos, you'll be able to figure out what works and what doesn't. And then if you're doing it on TikTok, the algorithm will eventually pick you up. So to stay on the bleeding edge, to kind of figure out what's going on, you need to be aware of what are things that are popular, what are things that are trending. You can't just be completely on the outside and then expect that you're going to be able to click with audiences. You need to know what's happening. And so, because I'm on TikTok, for example, I'm able to gather what's going on. But if we don't have that, there's other ways to figure it out. I can figure out things from Twitter, for example. You can see trending topics. A lot of times, if you're staying with pop culture, that's usually a good bet because a lot of people tend to know about the pop culture things. Like if there's a Star Wars movie that's coming out, which who knows when that's going to happen. Well, they've announced them, but you know how that's going. But if there's like a Star Wars movie that's come out that's really popular, or there's some other movie that's come out that's really popular, then you can do content that's related to that, but also brings in your species that you're trying to talk about or the subject. And it makes it where it clicks for the audience because they have something to base it off of that they're familiar with. And so just staying abreast of what's popular right now, what are people finding funny, what are people finding interesting.
Star Wars instantly got my attention. But how does Star Wars fall into the picture?
I just love Star Wars. And so for a while, I felt like I was in the box of, okay, I'm an academic, quote unquote, and so I'm not allowed to tweet that much about Star Wars, or I can't like do videos that involve Star Wars, and I definitely can't like do marine biology and Star Wars together. And then eventually I was like, no, I love Star Wars too much to just not talk about it. Scientists have more than just their academic personality, quote unquote. You can like multiple things and still be a scientist. I can have a life outside of academia and still be a good academic, which sometimes there's an underlying current of that's not a thing. It is a thing, and work-life balance is so important. And so I started trying to interweave Star Wars in with the marine biology and the aquatic animal content, which at first seems like there's no way that's going to work. And I've somehow managed to make that work, especially one of the ways that's been the easiest is to just throw a lightsaber in the video. Because it's Star Wars enough for me, but you can use it for like humorous effect. I often do what people call the doorway, where I will stand in my doorway and I don't have a lightsaber that actually changes to different colors. It's a cyan color. It's pretty similar to the cyan in Jedi Survivor, but I stand in the doorway and I put a red filter on and I just hold it menacingly. And it usually helps to drive the point across that, like, oh, this thing is dangerous, or this thing is not what you think it is. And so there's ways to interweave the stuff that you like into other content that you're trying to create or other science outreach that you're trying to do. And I think that's another way of like the secret sauce that you were talking about, where if you're mixing the things that you're really passionate about, or if you do it in a way that really makes you excited, people tend to catch that enthusiasm. And especially if it's something that's not normally done, that can get people really excited because they're just not expecting it. And so when they see it, they're like, oh, well, this is new. And they might keep coming back for more.
Random follow-up question. What is your favorite aquatic species from the Star Wars universe?
I love the pergo. So they're complicated. Because I've thought about this a lot. They're not technically aquatic, but in our world, whales are aquatic. So I think it's enough that it counts. I just think the concept of the pergills is so cool, and the way that they were utilized in Rebels was just like they're traveling through hyperspace. It's so awesome. I'm certain they're going to use those in the Ahsoka show. They're not just going to drop it in the Mandalorian season three and then do nothing with it.
For those of you who are not as steeped in the Star Wars lore, the Pergo are semi-sentient space-traveling whales that can actually travel in hyperspace.
Okay, Brooke, what should our listening audience take away from all this? What is Brooke all about?
Well, I'm big on fish. I love fish, but I also love invertebrates. And you can love both at the same time because people give me crap all the time, say you can't. You can be multiple things at once. You can be a science communicator, and you can also be an excellent scientist. A lot of times people have this stigma that they're like, oh, well, if you're doing a lot of science communication, it's because your actual science is lacking. I don't know where this came from, the stigma. It's wholly untrue. You can be multiple things at once. You can be a Star Wars fan, and you can be someone in STEM. You can love fish and invertebrates. You can wear makeup and be a scientist. There are so many different parts of us, and that's what makes us who we are. And it's totally okay if you're more than just one thing. And it's even better if you are more than one thing. And so when you're on a social media presence as an academic or as anyone, it's okay to let people see that you're more than just one thing. It should never be that, oh, I have to stay within this little box to make people happy. Make yourself happy. That's the most important thing.
Make yourself happy. Awesome note. It appears the long and short of good science communications, especially to younger and more diverse audiences, is to be true to yourself and share what excites you in ways that you find cool.
I also want to touch upon something that we've talked about in previous episodes. Science communication is real work and hard work. It shouldn't be an afterthought, and it definitely shouldn't be seen as something people should be expected to do for free. You have to invest in it and provide funds so that your science communicators can really express themselves and create clever content that connects with people.
Let their freak flag fly, as it were. Let them build it, and the audience will come.
I mean, it is a bit of that, but also it's a lot of work and a little bit of luck. And as a wise fish once said, just keep swimming. Thank you so much for joining us today, Brooke. It was great to learn more about your work and your insights about internet coolness. I look forward to more and more of your fantastic videos.
And thank you to our listeners for tuning in. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and share this podcast. It really helps us get the word out. We'll see you next time on Ocean
Ocean
Science
Science
Radio.
Radio. I look forward to more and more of your fantastic videos. Fantastic! That's why I tripped over it. I get the pun.
Awesome. Feel great. Feel free to do. Sorry, it's very hot here, and my brain is not functioning at optimum levels, so I might flub over a couple of words or sentences.
I may also do that. I'm like dying after the lab, but I'm very excited to do this.